The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
Our Culture Club guest today is supporting Fighting Blindness, which is organising a public engagement day on Saturday, June the 8th, as part of its hosting of the Retina International World Congress, which is taking place in the Dublin Royal Convention Centre. Now, one of the biggest global gatherings of eye researchers this year, this event is going to offer a rare opportunity for people with a vision impairment to quiz eye experts and to hear about the latest advances in treatments and cures. And to book your place, you can visit fightingblindness.ie. So, Orla Comerford, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank
Paralympian
you for having me.
Twice. Tell us a little bit about your eye condition, please.
Yeah, so I have an eye condition that's called Stargardt's. It basically affects my central vision. So it means that I have pretty poor central vision. I would struggle with anything that's sort of detail orientated, but I'd have good peripheral vision. So oftentimes people don't realise that I'm visually impaired when they meet me. I tend to kind of do better in new settings, because I have good kind of spatial awareness. But when it comes to anything detail related, that's where I'd struggle. So that could be, you know, reading a bus timetable. It could be recognising a friend across the road. It could be anything like that. So sort of detail would be where I struggle. And my central vision over time has progressively gotten worse. So at age 11, I was diagnosed with Stargardt's. So I came home from my school holidays and I wasn't able to read my books anymore. I wasn't able to read the board. And so we found out then that I had Stargardt's. And since that point, I have lost a lot of vision, but it would have been kind of gradual. So that summer, I lost a lot of vision quite quickly. And that's how I found out that I had Stargardt's. But since that point, kind of more gradually over time, I've lost some of that eyesight, which has made it easier to adapt to, you know, different, kind of have different things that work out for me, you know.
But Orla, can I ask, will you lose your sight entirely because of this?
Well, no, I should remain, you know, there's no way, I suppose the first thing is, there's no way to know how much sight I will or won't have in the future. I just know that the eyesight that I have today is what I have today. So I'm sort of a bit of a seize the day kind of person, you know, a glass half full. But ultimately, I could lose a lot more of my sight. I should kind of, you know, have some peripheral vision and some kind of like light and shadow and stuff like that. So I should remain with some of my vision, but I might lose a lot of my functional sort of central vision. Yeah.
And this, I suppose, is pertinent to doing the Culture Club today as well.
Yeah.
Because how does this impact not just on being able to do things like read books, but even your mobile phone?
Absolutely. Like, my mobile phone is an extension of myself at this point. Like, I know people make jokes about their attachments to their phones and social media and stuff, but honestly, it's a massive accessibility aid for me. Without the phone, I'm very lost. Like, even coming here today, right, in terms of finding the building, I have my Google Maps to help guide me. I have it reading out the directions to me, telling me what roads to cross, where to go.
Oh, you have to listen to it, obviously, rather than reading it.
Yeah, well, in order to read something, I have to be really quite close to it. So I can zoom into it on my phone and hold it up to my face. But then that poses a challenge when you're walking around a city holding an iPhone out up in front of your face. You don't want someone to nick it on you.
But also inches away from your face.
Inches away from your face. You don't want to then run into something or someone. Yeah. So for me, I found that that's sometimes a more helpful way of getting around. Or, you know, when it comes to getting a bus or a DART, being able to check the timetable so that I can put my hand out and hail the right bus, because I can't see what bus is coming at me. So in terms of
you'd even have a difficulty knowing what number or what words are on the front of the bus.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be able to tell at all.
You just see a bus coming towards you.
Yeah, thankfully the bus is a big bright colour, so usually in terms of contrast, I can see that it's coming at me and I'll stick the hand out because I can check on my phone and see, right, okay, the H1 is the next bus or the H2. But without that, I would be hailing down every bus and pissing off every bus driver in Dublin.
Okay, well, let's go to your Culture Club trial. Yeah. Oh, actually, before we get to it, Paralympics. You've been at the Paralympics in 2016 and then it was 2021 because of the COVID delay.
Mm-hmm.
How hopeful are you of making the sprinting team
Very
again this
hopeful.
Year?
Hopeful, yeah. It's been a really important training block for us. It's been going really well. We're really optimistic about this summer and these games. I think it's potentially the games that I'm kind of coming into in the best form and the best shape. So I'm really, really excited about it. It's a big year.
You're a sprinter. What distance is it?
100 metres.
Just 100, the fastest.
Yeah. That's what I like to do.
The female Jason Smith, so is it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to be, yeah. But he's set the bar fairly high now for me, so.
Okay, well, anyway, great. We look forward to seeing you in the Paralympics later this year.
Thank you.
And let's get to your Culture Club choices. And I think it's relevant to what we were talking about. The first pieces of music that you ever remember buying, and I believe they were on your iPod with an iTunes voucher.
Yeah. So I suppose that I'm sure I had CDs and stuff bought for me beforehand, but the first purchase that I remember making myself was I got an iPod for Christmas or for my birthday, and I got a voucher and you could spend 99 cents to buy, you know, your single. And I remember specifically buying Kanye West's Runaway and Kid Cudi's Erase Me, and buying the two of those songs together and playing them on repeat together. I subsequently bought a whole host of other songs, but I really remember them as being my big purchase, and, you know, playing the two of them back to back together. And I think it was like a point in time for me that I was really getting into music that I liked. It wasn't just listening to what was on the radio or what was on the mix on the CD that someone had got you, that was sort of like, this is a song that I really like, or this is music that, you know, kind of says something to me, and putting the two of them together. And even my iPod at the time would have been something I struggled to kind of see in terms of the kind of detail around the font and the text, but like the album covers, you could change the settings. The album cover was really big on the screen. And I just remember being able to recognize the colors and kind of shapes and patterns of those two album covers. So the two of them are sort of burned into my brain. I'll never forget them as kind of, you know, sonically going together, but also kind of visually as well.
Well, what we've done is we've put together a short clip which features both of those two songs. Kid Cudi, and before that, Kanye West. Still like them, Orla?
I still love them. I'm here, like, kind of bopping along to them. They're such good songs.
Because I'm fascinated by your album choices, particularly Fleetwood Mac's Rumours has come up so many times, and particularly I'm almost fascinated by the amount of younger people, even people of your generation, who love Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah. Well, I just think that album as a whole is so incredibly timeless. You know, it stands the test of time. It's just such a phenomenal album. It's storytelling, it's music. Like, the whole album is just so phenomenal. And I suppose for me, like, I definitely grew up listening to a lot of the music that my parents did, and that definitely really shaped the sort of music that I'm into. And I think I definitely have a fairly wide and varied kind of interest in music.
And so, we'll get to all of that, yes.
But I just think Rumours is, like, you can't beat it. You can put it on in any mood, at any kind of point of time, and there's just a song on there for anything you're feeling, you know?
And then the other choice you have is Frank Ocean and Blonde.
Yeah, I think Frank Ocean, for me, within this generation, is just, he is a true artist. I think the way that he makes music is so true to himself, the way that he takes inspiration from other artists, the way that he mixes music. I think sonically it's just so interesting. I think it's avant-garde at times. I think it's just something really unique, and I think it makes him a real artist. He's not about kind of making hits and selling records. He's about making art and making that true to himself. And I think, you know, he avoids kind of a bit of the spotlight and the fame that kind of surrounds the music industry. And I think that only kind of makes him more endearing to me, you know?
Well, the track we have from Blonde is Ivy.
I thought that I was dreaming when you said you loved me. Deep down, the feeling's still deep down is good.
today. Frank Ocean with Ivy from the album Blonde. You also gave him as your name as your favourite artist. But then band, you've really gone back to your parents' generation again, haven't you?
Yeah.
The Police.
I know, they're so good.
They are.
I think that was the thing. I was sort of like, okay, if I'm giving my favourite artist, it has to be Frank. And the temptation in terms of my favourite band, like from now, would be someone like, you know, the Fontaines or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of like the songs that I go back to that I was raised on, like that has to be The Police for me. Like I just, and there was a lot of U2 at home, the Rolling Stones, there was loads of that. But I think The Police for me were a band that really stuck. I thought their music just sounded so unlike everybody else. Even though it was much the same, there was just something about them that really felt different to me. And I think Sting's like voice as well is just so unique and so distinct that their
Stuart
albums
Copeland's
are ones,
drumming is also
it's just to die for. Like the work that they do is together is just, I love the music, and I think like those albums are ones that I still play on repeat. Yeah.
The track that we have from The Police is Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic.
Lovely.
Isn't it? The layers of music on top of each other.
Absolutely.
You love your gigs so clearly, don't you, from the list you've given us?
Yeah. It's so hot. I love gigs. It's my favourite thing to do. Like, if I have a few spare quid, I would much rather spend it on an experience doing something than on something material, you know. I love.
What is it about a gig?
I just think it's the whole atmosphere behind it. Like, I'm such a music head. Like, I always have music on when I'm, you know, training, when I'm out and about, when I'm working. And I think, like, for me, being in a space where that's like all encompassing, and the arts is of course something that like I'm so invested in. And I think music for me has been a really interesting kind of thing, because obviously as my eyesight has changed over time, the way I experience music has been different. Like, even the way I experience gigs, for example, like, you know, when I think about the first gig, probably one of the first gigs I was ever at was a Beyoncé concert. And like, it was insane. Like, I just remember we got really, really close up to the front, and of course there was a lot that I missed because of my eyesight, but there was still a lot that I could see. You know, I could see the graphics on the stage, on the screens, I could see the costumes, the band, the dancers, everything. And I just remember, you know, being like, wow, this, you just cannot experience this sitting at home listening to the music. Like, the music says one thing to me when I'm sat at home listening to it, but being here and experiencing the entire performance of it is just something completely different. And the power that that there is in kind of being in the middle of something, so sort of being so all encompassed by all that's going on. And so for me, I think that really informed kind of my love for concerts going forward. I've been to so many concerts. I've been to, you know, Steely Dan with my dad. I've been to Elton John. I've been to the kind of, you know, the young Irish artists and stuff like that. And there's been so many, you know, concerts, festivals, gigs that I love to go to. And of course, as I've gotten older, the amount that I can see going on stage has definitely changed. Like, there's a lot less that I can see now, but I find that the experience and the atmosphere is something that I still get the same sort of buzz off. Like, I feel like I almost am enjoying it more because I'm so leaned into the moment of it all. I'm not getting caught up about the kind of ins and outs of who's moving across the stage. I can feel the energy in the crowd as it moves from one side to the other.
You probably experience gigs a bit differently so to the rest of us. So
yeah,
do you think perhaps that maybe you concentrate concentrate and focus a little bit more on the sound and the ambience, maybe, than perhaps a lot of people who go may take for granted.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think all of us have all of those senses at our disposal. But of course, like visually, that's kind of the sense that takes over. And especially when you're at a concert like that and there's so much going on, like you're concentrating on what you can see in front of you. And sometimes that kind of distracts you from everything else that's going on. And of course, everyone's enjoying the music and the ambience, but I kind of feel like really like separating yourself from the visuals can even give that more power, like that feeling that you can feel the crowd swelling in different places. You can hear, you know, the different artists or the different band members at different points. It kind of forces you to say like, okay, well, I can't see now that they're spotlighting this artist or that artist. So I've got to really listen to those cues and kind of be at one in the moment to really enjoy it, you know?
Okay, you've picked for us Pete Tong with the Heritage Orchestra and Electric Picnic as your favourite. Why?
I just think that concert was so unlike anything else I have ever experienced. It was lashing rain in the middle of Strad Valley. We'd been to so many brilliant artists with so much going on. But this was just like something I'd never experienced before, right? Like Pete Tong's, these like Ibiza classics, but then played by an orchestra. It was something just so novel as well. There was something about the grandeur of the moment, the rain coming down and the pitch dark, the lights flood out across the whole crowd, the energy. I don't think there was a single person who had a phone out taking a picture or a video. Like everybody was just in the moment. And for me, that like kind of euphoria of that time, it just has to be one of my favourite experiences.
Well, we have a little bit, not from the Electric Picnic because the recording is from London's O2 Arena, but here is Pete Tong with the Heritage Orchestra performing Fatboy Slim's Right Here, Right Now. Terrific.
Oh,
Pete Tong,
so
the Heritage Orchestra. Okay, we need to take a break. Orla Comfort, stay with us, please, and we'll get to all your other Culture Club choices when we come back after this break. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Orla Comfort is with us, Paralympian, who is supporting Fighting Blindness. And let's talk about your favourite movie actors and directors, because again, given your visual impairment, how are you able to enjoy movies?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think movies are something that I still really enjoy, but I think I do ultimately have to enjoy them in a slightly different way than I maybe did growing up, or maybe than other people do. I think the experience of like saying being in a cinema for people is often like the best way to see film, but for me often it's really not, because there's a lot of distractions at play, and depending on where you're sitting, if I'm sitting a little bit far back from the screen and there's a lot of people in the theatre and there's a bit of chatter back and forth, like I would rely when I'm watching a movie on being quite close to it if I can be, but if not, then sort of more so on the vocal cues, right? There's someone who says something or whatever. I would very quickly on in a movie and early on in a movie start to recognise voices. So then when someone is shown on screen, when they're shown up close, I recognise their face. But then when they're shown kind of further away, I might not be able to recognise who they are, but their voices obviously come into play, and then I start to recognise who the characters are and how they interact. And so being at the cinema, I often feel like, you know, if I'm with someone, I can't turn around and ask them like, wait a minute, who's that? Or what's going on? Because you don't want to interrupt other people's kind of enjoyment of it. But for me, when I'm watching it, say at home, if I'm like watching it on the iPad, I can pause it, I can go back, I can zoom in. And that helps to kind of, you know, helps me to stick with the narrative.
And also the iPad has it very close to you as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what allows me to get it close to me. Like even a laptop, the sort of distance of the keypad in front of me makes a difference to how I would watch or experience a movie. So for me, I actually always love to watch stuff at home. You know, these big movies, people say, yeah, got to watch them in the cinema. Like there are some that I still go to and I'll go to them in the movies, but they're kind of inevitably the ones, if I really enjoy them, I go back and watch them again a second time, a third time, and I enjoy them so much more. But you get some out of all of them. Like I think about recently, I went to see Saltburn in the cinema, and instantly the second it came on, I could see that the aspect ratio was different than your regular film, that it wasn't kind of wide angle shot. And instantly I was uncomfortable. I was like, oh my God, this is like,
that's what made
wrong.
You uncomfortable with Saltburn. For other people,
more.
It was other things.
But it's like from the first second,
yeah,
I was like, okay, this movie's intention is to make me feel uncomfortable or to make me feel a certain type of way. So I kind of instantly was like, okay, that's key in this movie. And then when I watched the movie back another time at home, I didn't notice that on my iPad. It just didn't have the same effect, you know? And so I do think there's stuff I can get from a cinema or I can get at home, but...
Your choice of movie is very different to Saltburn.
Yes, very.
Forrest Gump.
Yeah, my favourite movie is Forrest Gump. I just love it so much. It's one of those comfort movies. I always go back to it. There's kind of so many storylines and there's so much in it and it's so gorgeous. Yeah, it's one I love.
An actor, Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, I think, you know, homegrown. I think it's amazing to have someone Irish representing us and the arts here on such a high level. And she's been in so many amazing films. And I love her and any of her interviews and stuff like that. I think she comes off so well.
She's
and I
dead
really
sound.
Like her.
Actually,
yeah, she seems it.
And let's hear a clip from Brooklyn. In this scene, she's on board a ship returning to the US after a trip home to Ireland.
You're not to eat. Years. No, you can eat when you get there. Don't eat on the boat. It'll stop you getting so sick. Do you promise me? I promise. And in a moment, I want you to go straight down to your cabin and lock the bathroom door on your side. When next door starts hammering, you can negotiate. When you get to immigration, keep your eyes wide open. Look as if you know where you're going. You have to think like an American. You'll feel so homesick that you'll want to die. And there's nothing you can do about it, apart from endure it. But you will. And it won't kill you. And one day, the sun will come out. You might not even notice straight away, it'll be that faint. And then you'll catch yourself thinking about something or someone who has no connection with the past. Someone who's only yours. And you'll realise that this is where your life is.
Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn. And then director, you've got Charlotte Wells.
Yeah, I have that one. Is of course, I know she kind of made her directorial debut last year with After Sun and Paul Mescal. And I thought it was the most powerful movie I've seen in so long. I thought the directorial decisions around some of the shots and stuff was so beautiful. I thought the way that she kind of framed the story and it being so personal to her was so gorgeous. And I thought there was these gorgeous moments or these shots where, you know, Paul would be out of shot and it might be his elbow or his hand or his phone or something, and he would be telling a story to his daughter. And sort of for me then going back, it was a movie I've watched a number of times, that those decisions, I'm like, okay, now, like, he's not in frame, so does that mean that this is, you know, a memory or is this imagination? Is she trying to piece together two memories with this kind of moment in between? And I thought there were so many decisions throughout it that just kept me wanting more. I thought it was such a stunning movie. I really, really loved it.
Okay. Now, you're not into plays or musicals or theatre really, are you?
No, to be honest, largely for me, my experiences of theatre would have been through school. So we would have been brought to a play with, you know, something we were studying in school. And none of those spaces were ever really made largely accessible for me. So I feel like I'd be on a stage, we'd be at a theatre or at a show and I would have no idea what was happening. I would really struggle to follow. I would find the dialogue even hard to grasp at some points because I wasn't sure who was speaking or what side of the stage they were on and what they were trying to portray. So I think for me, accessibility wise, it's something I've sort of not really engaged with because of my experiences being so poor with it. But I know now that there are lots of amazing people doing work to kind of make those spaces more accessible for people with visual impairments or kind of any other kind of accessibility needs. So I think it's something I would love to try to get back into, but it's definitely something that I've kind of shied away from.
You've gotten back into books though, haven't you, through audiobooks?
Yeah. Books again are another thing that I really left behind for a number of years. I just didn't read because I couldn't. And I would, you know, I might struggle through one page, but like I just, reading is something I really, really struggle with. Even when font is big enough, it takes a lot of time and energy. But a number of years ago, I got into audiobooks and it just has completely changed my world. I have minimum a story or two on the go at all times. I love. Well, it's not reading, but listening now, I suppose, to books. And I think it's a real privilege to be able to listen to those books and to be able to have access, you know, in the same way, like I would have found it hard, like a lot of my peers would be talking about a book that they read and something that they really enjoyed. And I felt like, oh, that's not something I get to be a part of. And so being able to be a part of that dialogue and that discourse and getting to enjoy those stories has been, a real joy for me.
You have two books you gave us. One, actually, John Boyne was with us in yesterday's programme about his new book, Earth.
Oh, can't wait.
You love The Heart's Invisible Furies.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful story. It's so heart-wrenching and it was a really, really long one. I think it was maybe 22 hours to listen to. So a big kind of beefy
book. Commitment.
Yeah, big commitment, but I flew through it. I could barely switch it off. I was almost close to like staying up at night to keep it going. It was a really, really brilliant book. I loved it. It was so gorgeous.
And the other one that you have, and we're going to play a clip from it, is a book called My Amy by Tyler James. What's all this about?
Yeah, so it's a book by Amy Winehouse's best friend, and it's a story about his Amy, like his friend and his relationship with her and his experience with her growing up and through kind of her struggles in life, her successes in life. He was really there for it all. And so I feel like it's a really, really honest depiction of her life, and it's sort of one that doesn't feel so exploitative in ways that kind of maybe other films and documentaries sometimes feel. And I know there's sort of a lot of talk now about the new movie that's come out and some people feeling it's a real missed opportunity to tell her real story. So I thought this book was one that I feel really did, and it was so well spoken.
Let's hear a little bit. It's read by Tyler James.
Friday the 22nd of July 2011, 1 p.m. The phone rang and her name came up. Amy. Her voice said like it always did, "You're right, darling." I wasn't all right, because she wasn't all right. Nothing was all right. Last night, I'd walked out of our home in Camden Square, the last of countless homes we'd lived in together since Amy was 18 years old. We'd been best mates since she was 12 and I was 13, inseparable soulmates forever. Walking out was a new tactic for me. I tried everything else. After years of trauma of trying to save Amy, I was running out of ideas. So now, every time she relapsed, I'd leave because I wouldn't support her drinking. If you're drinking, I won't be here. But mostly I'd go to my mum's in Essex. For 2, 3, 4 days, then Amy would ring. "T, please come home," and we'd make a deal. "I'll come home. We'll start the process again. Withdrawal, stopping drinking tomorrow." And it worked. It was working. She was getting better. She went 3 weeks without a drink, 4 days back on it, 3 weeks off again. Every day she was sober, she was in the gym, on the treadmill, rebuilding herself. It was a pattern, but she was close, so close. She was even writing music again. She hadn't touched hard drugs, despite what the tabloids said, for 3 years.
Wow. My Amy, read by Taylor James. That's really affecting the way it comes across.
No, absolutely. And I think that's the power in an audiobook sometimes that you just don't get in reading. It's really hearing it in the voice of someone who wrote it and telling that story so authentically. And there are parts that are really difficult in the book, and you can hear that struggle and that emotion in his voice when he's trying to read it. So I thought it was very powerful.
What's the childhood television you remember the most?
It has to be David Attenborough.
You're not the only person who said that even in recent weeks in this spot.
It's just like, there's nothing to me that is more comforting. I just remember I'd come home from school after a long day, or I'd be sick at home, and the only thing I'd want to put on was a bit of David Attenborough. It's still something I love to put on, but it really reminds me of my childhood. There was something about, you know, getting a new DVD set of his at Christmas or for your birthday or something, and I would play them on repeat. I just have so much love and admiration for kind of the natural world and for his take.
You've got two from adulthood, shall we say. Fleabag is the first.
Yeah, that's kind of a more recent one. I've always heard people speak about Fleabag, and I suppose Andrew Scott's role, of course, in recent times has been discussed. And so I watched it recently and I loved it. I thought it was so brilliant. I thought it was great.
And The Bear.
Yeah, The Bear. I think, like, unsurprisingly, like so many other people, I really loved it. I think Jeremy Allen White and Ada de Debry, she's just so good and so funny, and her connect with Ireland and stuff has just been brilliant in the media in recent times. So I thought that show was really powerful again. I thought it really sucked me in, and I was sort of binging it. I was putting the next episode on and next episode on. So I love that one.
Don't have time to play a clip because I do want to get to your buried treasure. We ask people to come up with something unusual that they think people should like know more about. And what are you giving us?
Mine is the Irish talent that we have in music at the moment. I think there are some big names that people are beginning to know. So there's obviously Kojak, Manjola and Abbey Coulibaly, who are brilliant. But I think Spider is definitely an underrated one. She's an Irish artist. Her stuff is brilliant. And I just think the talent we have here in the music industry is so beyond, not just even in music, you know, in theatre and in film and acting and the visual arts. We have so much talent here at home. So I think.
And I have to mention the podcast you've done, because our own Louise Cantlin would be delighted to know that you're a fan of How to Gale.
Oh my God, I've been in since week one. I am hooked. You know, as someone, I would have had a really strong level of Irish coming out of school and would have been very passionate about my Irish. And it's something I really don't get a lot of opportunities to practice. And so I've really felt like their podcast for me has really been a way back into the language for me. It has it in my ear once a week, every week. I find myself thinking about things in Irish now or saying a few more bits and pieces. And so for me, they have played a really important role in that.
Louise is away at the moment, but I'll make sure she knows that you've given this recommendation. Orla Comfort, it has been terrific having you for the Culture Club. Thank you so much
for having me.
I really hope that you get to the Paralympics this year, which would be terrific to get to your third Paralympics. And we will keep in contact with you. And of course, Fighting Blindness, having that major event on the 8th of June, fightingblindness.ie is the website for details.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.